House, please come to order. Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Lock the rolls and tally the board.
30 members present.
We do have a quorum to conduct business. At this time, we'll take a brief at ease while we wait for the Senate to join us for the governor's messages. The House, please come to order. In accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Gene Theriault.
The joint session will come to order. The purpose of this joint session is hear the combined State of the State and State of the Budget message from the Honorable Frank Murkowski, Governor of the State of Alaska. Senator Stevens.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and all members be shown present.
Without objection, so ordered. Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown present.
Without objection, so ordered. It is my pleasure at this time to introduce the First Lady for the State of Alaska, Nancy Murkowski. I'd also like to introduce at this time the Lieutenant Governor's wife, Ms. Carolyn Lehman. In addition, we have one special guest that I'd like to bring to everybody's attention this evening. We have in our presence this evening the Speaker from the Oklahoma House of Representatives, Representative Larry Adair, who's in the Capitol today on behalf of the Energy Council. Representative Adair, if you'd stand, please. At this time, would Senator Olson and Representative Dahlstrom please escort the Honorable Frank Murkowski to the joint session? It's my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Frank Murkowski, Governor, State of Alaska.
Good evening, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the legislature, distinguished guests, and my fellow Alaskans. Nancy and I thank the people of Alaska for providing us yet another opportunity to serve this great state. Thank you for bringing us back home. Tonight, I'm given the pleasure of describing the state of the state and the state of the budget for the coming year. Now, to begin with, I want to introduce my team in leading this state. First and foremost, my wife Nancy, who's already been introduced. As in all other of our mutual efforts, why she has stood beside me, given me a little advice and counsel from time to time, told me what to do, as a matter of fact, and supported me as well. On my right, I have Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman and his wife, Carolyn. And it's a real privilege to have this respected legislature on the team. Now, we have a cabinet of experienced, dedicated Alaskans who share the commitment of providing the people of this state with the best public service possible. I'm going to introduce those that are with us tonight and those that have been appointed. And first is my Chief of Staff, Jim Clark. He's the early riser of the bunch. Jim? And our Attorney General, Greg Rinkus. Greg? The Director of Management and Budget, Cheryl Fresca. Cheryl? Our Director of Budget Review, Jay Hogan, couldn't be here tonight, so we'll recognize him and move on to the Commissioner of Corrections, Mark Antrim. Mark? Commissioner of Community and Economic Development, we call it Commerce now, Edgar Blatchford. Edgar? Commissioner of Environmental Conservation, Ernesta Ballard, from a city a little further south of here. And the youngest commissioner, which I had the distinction of being just a few years ago, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Joel Gilbertson. And the Commissioner of Military and Veterans Affairs, Craig Campbell. And up from the mine, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, Tom Irwin. Tom? No stranger to Juneau, Commissioner of Revenue, Bill Corbis. Bill? And the Commissioner of Education, Shirley Holloway. Shirley? And the Commissioner of Public Safety, Del Smith. Yeah. The Acting Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, Mike Barton. Mike? The Acting Commissioner of Administration, Sharon Barton. Sharon? And the Acting Commissioner of Fish and Game, Kevin Duffy. We've got a few more holes to fill, so we'll have an opportunity to introduce those five that are yet to be named a little later, not tonight. I want to recognize the legislative leaders. Senate President Gene Theriault, it's a pleasure to serve with you, Mr. President. Speaker of the House, Pete Cott, Mr. Speaker, it's a pleasure to serve you. The Senate Majority Leader, Ben Stevens. The House Majority Leader, John Coghill. The Senate Minority Leader, Johnny Ellis. The House Minority Leader, Ethan Berkowitz. And I understand you've already introduced Larry Adair, who snuck in the back door from Oklahoma, the Speaker of the House, the state of Oklahoma. I want to congratulate all of you and thank you for your commitment to good government and the people of Alaska. You notice we had a pretty good day here today. I think the sun did peek through. And as we look at this executive branch, you recognize the new faces in Juneau. And as I look out at you, there's some new faces as well in the legislative branch, which reminds me of a story my mother-in-law said, and that was, happy is the bride the sun shines on. Well, the fog lifted in Juneau today. It's been, I think, fair for the opening of the 23rd Alaska legislature. So I'm optimistic, in spite of the wind, that an old saying can be applied as we start out. Start out with this new marriage between our two branches of government. We start out on what I hope will be a very long and fruitful honeymoon. Somebody nod their head and say yes. Over the past 18 months, I've had an opportunity to listen carefully to Alaskans and their views on the state of our state. And on Election Day, Alaskans spoke with a loud voice. They voted for leadership, accountability. They wanted a future for our state to be built on a foundation of hard work and on resource wealth. They asked for a government that could learn to live within its means and that will invest in jobs and prosperity. During the transition period between administrations, Alaskans, many of them, volunteered their time. We had small teams that performed full reviews of each department of government. Others hosted town meetings at which nearly 5,000 Alaskans participated. They were everything from unemployed loggers in Ketchikan to out-of-work rural Alaskans, to the concerned fishers in Bristol Bay. And the people said they're looking for state leadership, leadership to protect current jobs and encourage the creation of new jobs. So as we gather here tonight, we have the marching orders for this government. They have come in a strong voice from the people. Now, they're saying accountability, a smaller, smarter state government. Wherever I go, Alaskans tell me they expect the state government to tighten its belt and focus on basic priorities and services, education, transportation, and public safety. We will do that, and I've asked Budget Director Cheryl Fresca and her team to build the fiscal year 2004 budget to enable the state to meet its traditional responsibilities to citizens. As part of the OMB process, we are evaluating every service the state now delivers. Our goal is to determine how effective programs are at delivering the results promised. And we're committed to this process and committed to working closely with you to ensure departments are performing well. Now, we've all tightened our belt one time or another, and this is another time. We all recognize the formidable challenge of putting the state on track to live within its means. Yet it's a challenge to the people of Alaska. It's a challenge the people of Alaska expect us to meet. And the administration's proposed fiscal year 2004 budget will be submitted to the legislature before March 6th. Now, when you receive our spending plan, we will ask that you view it within the context of a five-year plan. The first year of this plan focuses primarily on working with you to control the spending side of the fiscal gap. Controlling spending will require unpopular choices. It will be asking all Alaskans to make sacrifices for the mutual long-term good. We simply have to hold the line on state spending. Now let's talk a little bit about revenue enhancement. What's our plan for increasing revenue? Well, ladies and gentlemen, in a single word, it's oil. Alaskans know that oil production from the North Slope is down to about 1 million barrels a day, which means the pipeline is running at half its capacity. The good news is that we have renewed the right-of-way, that pipeline, for 30 years, and it's estimated we have another 50 to 100 years of oil reserves. But first, we should look for ways to help the industry enhance recovery from existing and known fields and increase daily production. Now, we have met with producers in the last few days to encourage increased production from heavy oil. Second, we need more exploration of our oil resources. And we can accomplish this by improving access, expanding the drilling window, and reducing the permitting time. Then we must actively promote our oil resources to attract new investment from large and small companies. Now, where do you come in? This is going to require statutory and regulatory changes and state investment in infrastructure. But I know that working cooperatively together, we can make this pay off for Alaskans and Alaska's future. Now, some of you might not be too surprised, but I'm also very optimistic about ANWR. We're working with the congressional delegation to open the coastal plain of Anwar and to advance the gas line project as well. Of course, it's going to take several years before these projects are producing revenue, but it's critical that we do everything we can to get them underway as soon as possible. Support is building in Congress, and the President is an outstanding supporter. And there is a growing national support for Anwar, as well as for building the gas pipeline. I've asked Brian Malnick, some of you know him, my former staff director on the Senate Energy Committee, to work with John Katz in our Washington, D.C. office, and with Arctic Power, and with Ted, Don, and Lisa, to help move forward federal legislation. I want to be sure that the state is helping every way it can, and I will be asking you to support an Anwar appropriation in our supplemental budget request. Now, the gas project, of course, is on the minds of virtually all Alaskans. You'll recall at the end of the last Congress, there was general agreement on regulatory incentives needed to move the gas pipeline project forward. Unfortunately, we did not reach agreement on the necessary financial incentives, although we did on others. But that's a challenge for this session of the Congress and the Bush administration. But the state must also do its part to provide the regulatory and fiscal certainty necessary to get a gas line project underway. I want to work closely with you to pass a statutory framework for the gas line and then get to the work of negotiating the details with all of the stakeholders. We have already met with the producers to begin this process. Now, the citizens of Alaska passed a gas pipeline authority. Some of you are quite familiar with that. In November, the voters approved Proposition 3, creating the gas pipeline authority. This administration will appoint the board and seek appropriations for its initial activities. It would make good sense for this new gas pipeline authority to coordinate its work with community, port authorities, owners of the gas, and other proponents of commercializing Alaska's gas. I want you to understand that I will support any economically viable project that will get the state's gas to market. Now, we've got other potential development capabilities, many other resources, and while oil development is certainly the most important revenue source for the state, we have our fishing, our mining, our timber, tourism, agricultural industries. These provide the bulk of jobs for Alaskans. But make no mistake, as you hear my recommendations for revitalizing these industries, I'm fully mindful of our obligation to protect our environment. I'm also mindful of the need to consult and work with the people of rural Alaska and regional governments in making the changes and implementing the development plans. Jobs in rural Alaska should first be for the people who live there. Now, I've asked Commissioner Edgar Blatchford, Deputy Commissioner Bill Knoll, and Director Margie Johnson of our Commerce Department to be aggressive in promoting our resource industries. I've also asked that they work with the native regional corporations to determine how the state might be able to assist them in developing their resources. I believe that a close working relationship between the state and the Alaska Native corporations can provide the economic engine for rural Alaska. Now, fishing is something that is kind of challenging all our imaginations, and the realization that fishing provides more jobs in Alaska than any other private industry leaves us with a real obligation. However, parts of the fishing industry, particularly the salmon industry, are in deep trouble, and we're going to have to do something about it. Here's what we suggest. First, we need to, think outside the can for a change. Let's find some new markets for our salmon. We need to look at every option, and I'm even calling on the cruise ship industry, to buy our wild Alaska salmon to serve its passengers. I think we must become even more innovative in marketing our wild Alaska salmon. We also need to increase quality control and assist in transporting our fresh wild salmon to market when the season's on. We also must aggressively expand our fledgling mariculture industry, which I think has a tremendous future. Secondly, we will work with our congressional delegation to try and arrange for additional federal purchases of the warehouse canned salmon on stock. Third, I'm going to be meeting with the processors and look for new markets and investments to see how we can reduce the impacts to coastal fishing communities caused by the closure of the Ward's Cove operation. And fourth, I've directed our staff to gain control of those federal and state dollars that in the past have been doled out to various interest groups. I want these funds directed to where they will be able to do the most good to revitalize the fishing industry in Alaska. Finally, we will make the most of the opportunity to work with our delegation on reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Management and Conservation Act. As you know, this act has a direct bearing on decisions affecting Alaska fisheries. Consistent with these actions is our policy for making selections to the Board of Fisheries. You perhaps heard a little bit about that the other day. I certainly did. Now, the Board of Fisheries began its meetings earlier this week in Sitka. So I expedited the selection of the new members, and this allowed them to take their seats at the meeting. But I requested and I talked to each of the board members that I appointed. And as a consideration of appointment, I asked them to adhere to representing the best interests of all Alaska fisheries and the affected communities. I want not only a balanced but also an objective board of fisheries. This means that they not side with one gear group or one fishing group, that they not commit to vote for the interests of solely commercial versus subsistence versus sport fishing interests, but they act in the interest of what is best for all Alaska and the best interest of the renewability of our vast fisheries resources. Now, I intend to apply these same criteria of objectivity and fairness to all board appointees so that they do really what's best for Alaska and the resource as their priority. Now, the mining industry is certainly one that has a tremendous future in our state. And I want to talk a little bit about it. Mining holds the potential to provide thousands of additional high-paying jobs in Alaska. But I think it's fair to say that the potential is not being realized. Permitting problems, lack of infrastructure, environmental litigation, delayed development, and increasing costs. We compete with the world for minerals. Other parts of the world do a better job of attracting investment because their costs are lower. We've begun to turn this around by eliminating redundant permitting requirements, coordinating permits through the large project team concept. And we've been developing infrastructure in our important mining regions. One example of the latter is the potential for infrastructure support for the Donlin Creek project in western Alaska. We are seeking the support of the Bush administration for a rail extension to Fort Greely to access the new missile defense system. Now, this rail extension would not only benefit the military, but the mining and agricultural sectors of that area as well. You know, Alaska has many promising mineral prospects, including the potential for world-class mines at Pogo and Kensington outside of Juneau. But let's not forget the timber industry because the trees are still there. We intend to do all we can to restore the timber industry in southeast Alaska. This proud industry, which once supported nearly 4,200 jobs, now provides just 620 jobs. While we cannot bring back the heyday of the timber jobs provided by the integrated pulp and sawmill industries of the 60s and 70s, we can create an atmosphere in which investors are willing to come to Alaska to build plants and create jobs. So here's our plan to revitalize the timber industry. First, we will be proactive by intervening in litigation brought by environmental groups against federal timber sales. I've directed my Attorney General to resume the state's suit against the U.S. Forest Service's roadless rule. This lawsuit... This lawsuit was brought to prevent the Clinton administration from imposing that rule in the Tongass because it violates the promise in ANILCA's No More Clause. We will hold the federal government to its promise of no more wilderness in Alaska so that our timber and other natural resource industries have room to grow. And I have asked Undersecretary of Agriculture Mark Rae, who oversees the Forest Service, to establish a 10-year timber sales contract in Alaska. This is absolutely necessary to encourage investment and provide jobs. I've asked the Forest Service to review and update the 1997 Tongass Land Management Plan, and we encourage an increase in the allowable sale quantity to 360 million board feet of timber per year. This is a level that's absolutely necessary to support a sustainable integrated timber industry. And we will work with the Bush administration to identify lands which we can trade to create a new 1 million state forest in southeastern Alaska. It's our intent that funds from the timber sales would be used to support an expanded Alaska Scholars Program. I see the president of the university back there nodding his head saying yes. Let's not forget agriculture. It's clear that farming works in Alaska. We have many excellent success stories from the Mat Valley to Delta Junction, Kenny Lake to the Kenai Peninsula. But the recent legislative budget and audit report on the Division of Agriculture pulls no punches in its indictment of the state's failed efforts to promote and assist the farming community. So I'm going to be sending down to you a reorganization plan to address these problems. Alaskan farmers can and should continue to provide a significant level of state sufficiency for Alaska's residents. Tourism, of course, is no stranger to any of us, and Alaska tourism provides countless business opportunities for small businesses and employment for thousands of Alaskans. With improved access and new world-class destinations, our tourism potential is simply without limits. One example that comes to mind is the Kentucott-McCarthy area. Why has it really taken so long for this area to attract significant tourism? The answer in one word is access. We should remember that access to Alaska's largest park, the Wrangell-St. Elias, was first built for mineral exploration by the Copper River Railroad from the south to Chittenden, Cordova on the other end, and to the north, the mining road to Nabesna. We who enjoy the park today are the beneficiaries of our pioneer ancestors who had the grit and the gumption to carve that access out of the wilderness. Additionally, we need a northern route into the 6 million acre Denali National Park, the state's number one tourist destination. Now, as we improve our transportation infrastructure, we open new opportunities for this industry and for the people of all ages to experience the wonders of Alaska. Well, how do we do some of this? Well, permit streamlining is one way. To be successful in revitalizing our resource development and tourism industries, we have to remove the obstacles over which we have control. In order to streamline the permitting process, I will be laying on the table a combination of executive orders and legislation to do the following. First, the Department of Natural Resources will become the lead agency for all state permitting. We will build on the so-called large project concept developed by the Department of Natural Resources back in 1992 when it considered permitting the Fairbanks Gold Project. Now, the state will provide additional legal and financial support to enable the Department of Natural Resources to be the lead agency. I expect the Department of Natural Resources to provide the direction to and coordinate with other state agencies in determining the substantive environmental requirements that must be met in order to issue permits. As the lead agency, the Department of Natural Resources will set a schedule for other agencies to follow in working through the process and will hold those agencies accountable to the timetable. Second, I plan to streamline the coastal management program. We will transfer responsibility for the Alaska Coastal Management Program from the Office of the Governor to the Department of Natural Resources. I'm also eliminating the Division of Governmental Coordination in the Office of the Governor in favor of the Department of Natural Resources as the lead agency. Again, we will work with our coastal communities to ensure that their interests are protected, and we will consult before these transfers are made. And finally, I'm transferring the permitting function of the Habitat Division of Fish and Game to the Department of Natural Resources in order to consolidate permitting authority. Now, on many occasions, the Habitat Division has been the sole agency opposing and delaying legitimate, and I want to emphasize legitimate, projects important to the state. A couple of examples: the Dorothy Lake Hydro Project, the Ketchikan Southeast Intertie, and yes, even the Juneau Golf Course. Now, these steps should substantially reduce the time for the issuance of state permits without impacting substantive environmental requirements, because that's our intention. I want to talk about the Denali Commission and Rural Development. We look forward in working with the Denali Commission to provide jobs in rural community, rural portions of Alaska. And a model my administration is currently exploring is one that was established here in Alaska by the Northwest Arctic and North Slope boroughs. They partnered together to address economic development in their regions. And I encourage other regions to look at this model and identify ways to create synergies with other regions to work with the state to meet the challenges of development together. This administration recognizes the contribution Alaska Natives and Alaska Native organizations have made to this great state. As my administration moves forward, I want to convey my commitment to a healthy spirit of cooperation with Alaska's Native community. As the majority of the state's resource development will take place in rural Alaska, rest assured that rural Alaska will have a seat at the table during any decision-making process. I promise you that. Now, airports, roads, ports. Talk a little bit about that during the campaign season, but we are focusing attention on the development of airports, roads, and marine transportation. I announced last week a reorganization of the Department of Transportation to create an air division, a highways division, and a marine highway or ferry division. Our international airports, you know, at Anchorage and Fairbanks, provide nearly 20,000 jobs in our state. We need to promote those airports as gateways from America to Asia and Europe for both passengers and for air cargo. We must also promote and enhance our rural airports so that they too can provide a better level of safe travel. For our highway system, there are several projects for which we seek federal funding. The Kinnick Arm Crossing. This project will open up the west side of Cook Inlet for residential opportunities, improve travel time to the Susitna Valley, points north, and create generally more activity. For those from Ketchikan, the Ketchikan Bridge. It will provide access to the Ketchikan Airport and open up additional economic opportunities on Gravina and Penick Island across from Ketchikan. The Juneau Access, is it a road into Juneau or is it a road out? On this project, I've ordered the draft EIS for this project to be restarted for the soonest possible construction. Other projects include the Bradfield Canal Road. A road between King Cove and Cole Bay. And road connections to some of the villages in western Alaska. I've asked the Department of Transportation to identify roads that would help promote jobs. We will develop this list through the State Transportation Implementation Plan and work with you, the legislature. Finally, the restructured Department of Transportation includes a Marine Highway Division charged with the responsibility to bring the fast ferries online and otherwise improve ferry service to our coastal communities. All of these initiatives would assist resource development and tourism in their prospective areas. Now, it wouldn't be appropriate if we didn't talk about the permanent fund, but I've got a surprise. The $23 billion of our permanent fund has really become our state's greatest source of revenue. I propose that we work together to take a fresh look at our permanent fund. In addition to evaluating proposals for fundamental change, I think there are some other things that we can do right now. You know, for years, the state has used the services of money managers from outside Alaska to make investment decisions for the permanent fund. These non-Alaskan investors make a lot of money, millions of dollars a year for handling our account. Well, I'd like to see some of that money come back to Alaska, perhaps in charitable contributions. In addition, I'm asking the permanent fund board to examine our contracts with these non-Alaska money managers to see what, if anything, can be done to reduce their fees and thereby increase the profits of the permanent fund. Finally, I'm going to ask the boards, our board to see to it that we have a dialogue with the major national and international companies in which Alaska's permanent fund invests millions of dollars. I'd like to hear their ideas on how they can help create jobs here in Alaska. While we want the permanent fund to make good, sound investments, there's no reason why we shouldn't direct attention to those companies willing to provide jobs and invest here in Alaska. I think we must be more aggressive in leveraging our investments, and I'll be looking for a new permanent fund board that shares this principle. One of our priorities, all of our priorities, of course, is education. So, as we look at education, I want you to know that my education initiatives are going to focus on ensuring that each and every child meets academic standards. All children in Alaska deserve a quality education no matter where they live, what their home language might be, or what their cultural background is. You know, we had a recent trip to Washington, D.C., included a very productive meeting on No Child Left Behind with Education Secretary Rodney Page and the state's Education Commissioner Shirley Holloway, who's here with us. We were assured at that meeting that Alaska's special circumstances would be recognized. The new No Child Left Behind law is going to require us to renew efforts to provide quality education throughout the state. It's up to us to meet that challenge. As you know, under the state law, communities which have 10 school-aged children or more must have a school. Of the 509 schools in Alaska, more than 80 have 25 students or less. Now, that law requires us to send teachers to rural areas who must teach multiple grades and subjects in which they perhaps have not been trained. 65% of the teachers in Alaska come from the lower 48, and rarely are they prepared for life in rural Alaska. It will be very difficult to meet the requirements of the No Child Left Behind law, but I want you to know I support the program, and I'm going to work to achieve it, and I want your help. I think you'll agree that government alone cannot solve all the problems with education. The solution must involve a partnership among community elders, parents, students, teachers, regional governments, and organizations in combination with a strong commitment from state government to advance the quality of education. Among the education initiatives my administration is taking is, first, enhance the opportunities for regional learning centers and distance learning so we have a means to provide an intensive learning experience for our students and for our paraprofessionals and our teachers who work in those schools. Secondly, we will build on the success stories, and we've had a few, the schools in Galena, Chugach, Nenana, Mount Edgecombe, to name a few, and I could name any more. Third, work with community leaders, elders, and parents to stress the importance of the No Child Left Behind strategy and how it might best be implemented in their own schools. And fourth, it's the policy of this administration to respect parents' rights and their role in furthering the education of their children. Finally, maximize the amount of federal dollars available to assess the progress of school children and to provide resources to improve schools based on the assessments. Now, there's another area that kind of taken for granted, and that's the charitable services. And I think we'll agree that neither the federal nor the state governments can provide for all our citizens' needs. And we're fortunate to be a state of generous people. We have many organizations that step up to fill the gap of social services. I commend them, but we can and we must do more. And I've asked my Lieutenant Governor, Lauren Lehman, to lead an effort to expand our partnership with a faith-based community and other charitable organizations. Ultimately, our success in responding to the people's needs will be measured less by new top-down social programs than it will be by the contribution that we make as individuals, families, friends, churches, or charitable organizations. Health care, of course, is on the minds of all of you. The delivery of adequate health care is a real challenge, made more difficult by the escalating costs of Medicaid. I've asked Commissioner Greg O'Clery of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and Commissioner Joel Gilbertson of the Department of Health and Social Services to work together to ensure we have a sufficient number of qualified health care professionals throughout Alaska. And I've directed Commissioner Gilbertson to identify strategies to maximize federal and state resources so we can improve the delivery of health care services along with preventing health care strategies as well. In the area of health care, we've all been familiar with substance abuse. Alcohol, inhalant, they remain a problem of enormous proportions today, particularly among Alaska's young people. Children affected by substance abuse are far less interested in learning and far more prone to suicide, which is another major concern for children in both rural and urban areas. I will work with you and the local communities to protect and nurture our children through tough programs to keep harmful substances away from them and expand their learning opportunities, and providing access to counseling, role models, athletics, in order to provide hope and activities to occupy their minds and bodies. In that same vein, I want to talk a little bit about crime. Substance abuse is also behind much of the crime we have. Domestic violence, other problems, destroying families. I want the state to apply its full resources to assist those communities that have chosen to be dry in rural Alaska. I intend this administration to have the reputation of being tough on crime. we make as individuals, families, friends, churches, or charitable organizations. Health care, of course, is on the minds of all of you. The delivery of adequate health care is a real challenge, made more difficult by the escalating costs of Medicaid. I've asked Commissioner Greg O'Clery of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and Commissioner Joel Gilbertson of the Department of Health and Social Services to work together to ensure we have a sufficient number of qualified health care professionals throughout Alaska. And I've directed Commissioner Gilbertson to identify strategies to maximize federal and state resources so we can improve the delivery of health care services along with preventing health care strategies as well. In the area of health care, we've all been familiar with substance abuse, alcohol, inhalant. They remain a problem of enormous proportions today, particularly among Alaska's young people. Children affected by substance abuse are far less interested in learning and far more prone to suicide, which is another major concern for children in both rural and urban areas. I will work with you and the local communities to protect and nurture our children through tough programs to keep harmful substances away from them and expand their learning opportunities, and providing access to counseling, role models, athletics, in order to provide hope and activities to occupy their minds and bodies. In that same vein, I want to talk a little bit about crime. Substance abuse is also behind much of the crime we have. Domestic violence, other problems, destroying families. I want the state to apply its full resources to assist those communities that have chosen to be dry in rural Alaska. I intend this administration to have the reputation of being tough on crime. Bootleggers of prohibited substances into rural communities, or any community for that matter, should be on notice now that we will prosecute to the full extent of the law. If you bring liquor into a dry village, you could forfeit your airplane or your snow machine, and you can expect a jail sentence, and you can expect some heavy fines. We will not be passive to criminal conduct anywhere in our state. I'll send you, as one of my top priorities, a major criminal justice package. Let me give you one example, self-defense under current law. Today, when two gangs are shooting each other and an innocent bystander is shot, as happened recently in Anchorage, no one is charged with a crime because each gang claims it was self-defense. We're going to change that. If you bring a gun to a fight, you will be responsible for the consequences. Not only do I, and I know you do, support our law enforcement officers in their heroic effort to protect the people of Alaska, but I will make sure our prosecutors and the criminal justice system have the resources to protect the people, especially the most vulnerable among us, our children. I'm very happy to announce tonight the appointment of two of our very best prosecutors as district court judges in Anchorage. They are Brian Clark and Jack Smith. We've had some problems in corrections, and I hope that all of you would agree that this team approach, which we've initiated, has taken the Department of Corrections to a vein where we think it's working very well and is off to a good start. The enthusiasm and professionalism shown by Commissioner Antrim and his team, I think, have been a breath of fresh air. We've got employee morale up, and we think the public is safer as a result. We hope to see these kinds of results throughout state government. Now, Another area closer to home is Homeland Security. I've recognized the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs in the sense of a reorganization effort to provide for stronger homeland security in the state. This is absolutely necessary in these crucial times, given the potential for war with Iraq, which could begin as early as, well, next month. We don't know. Security of our pipeline, oil production facilities, and oil tanker ports is a national concern. So I've directed my staff to work with the Department of Justice, the Department of Interior, the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and others to make sure the pipeline is secure. The reorganized Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is critical to our state's security. I'm very happy that the head of that is with us tonight, Greg Campbell. Speaking of the military and speaking of some of the unsung heroes, you know, we know Alaska's richest resource are our people. But I'm very pleased to recognize one such Alaskan who is with us in the gallery tonight. This gentleman is Petty Officer Third Class Jason Quinn from the U.S. Coast Guard Air Station on Kodiak.